first speaker, and I give you George.
I'm really intimidated, and it's kind of nice that it's a smaller room and half of them I know. Thank you for being here. It's really cool. But that's also intimidating, too. But I'm an addict. My name's George, and I'm really, really, really grateful to be here and be able to be a part of this. My adrenaline is going so fast, I can feel it in my fingers and my toes. And I was thinking about this earlier because I was reminded of my early recovery, literally early, like the first week or two. I was going with a rehab to these meetings in California, and it was a huge room of like 150 people. That was on a normal Sunday. The last Sunday of the month, it was more like 300 people. It was huge. And it was an hour and a half meeting, and they had two speakers, and then they'd open it up to everybody else. And I went with this crowd of women every week, and every week they'd say, they'd ask, you know, anybody who's new, could you, in less than 30 days, please stand up and be recognized. So every Sunday I'd stand up and say, I'm an addict, my name's George, and I'd sit down. And then they'd want to know anybody who was out of town, and since we were in California and I was from D.C., I thought I was supposed to stand up again. And there was another woman that was there, it was from out of town, she did the same thing, so I wasn't totally alone in this. But about 4 weeks into this, after the first two speakers spoke, there was a guy on the stage, the chair of the meeting, and he couldn't get anybody else to come up and share. And he looked out in the crowd, and he pointed at me, and he says, how about the girl from Washington, D.C.? And I went, no. And he looked me in the face and very kindly said, have you heard that if you want what we have, you might think about what we do what we do? Shit. Fucked. Okay, I got to do this, you know? And it was this huge room, and I remember walking down the, or at least I thought it was huge. It's probably tiny. If I went back today, it's probably this big. But it seemed huge. And I remember walking down the hall, and it was up these stairs and onto the stage and behind a podium similar to this. And I remember looking down and seeing pieces of paper. There was writing on it, but the letters were jumping up at me like this. I had no idea what it was. I know today it's like the readings, but I didn't know that's what it was then. And I remember I looked up at the crowd, and I remember thinking how grateful I was that I'd found something that just might help me. And I don't know what I said, but I know I said I was grateful, and I was glad that the y'all were here. And like I said, I have no clue what else I said. I was told later that it was probably because I was telling the truth. It's like, okay. And I remember I got back down off the stage, and it was like forever getting back to the seat that I had, and I sat down next to the girlfriend that I'd made in rehab, and I was like this. And she put her arm around me, and she said, that adrenaline rush is a kick, isn't it? So that's what I'm feeling right now. I was like, okay, let me talk about this, because it's scary. It's still scary for me. But the reality is those words come back to me all the time, that if I want what you guys have, I got to do what you do. And for real, when I got to that rehab, I think when I look back at my history and especially the last few years of my using, I realized, I didn't know the term back then, but I realized I was in my bottom for quite a while. And by the time I made it to rehab, I had had enough. And about literally 6 months before I got clean, this guy who I have known since I was like 16 years old, he was in and out of my life like a bad penny all those years. And this last time, six months before I got clean, he came back into my life. This time he was clean. And this was a guy who I knew really well. He was a hardcore dope fiend. He was a comfortable dope fiend. That's what he did. A couple times I'd heard he was dead. Didn't think much about that. Really wasn't too surprised when he would resurface, but I was surprised he'd resurface doing the same shit. And that was amazing. But this time, he popped back up in my life, and he had like 3.5 years clean. And he took me out to dinner, and I'll never forget it. I was sitting, I had my little miniatures in my purse. He told me I could have a drink. I'm like, oh, no, that's okay. But He told me all about Narcotics Anonymous. He told me about sponsors and steps and meetings and, frankly, all this other happy horse shit that meant nothing to me. But what meant something to me, looking at this guy, I'm looking at him and realizing that I could see he was clean. Not only was he clean, he liked it. And the, you know, and the two things that went through my mind was, first of all, if this guy can do it, anybody can. And honestly, to this day, I'm still convinced of that. He's got over 20 years, and I still can't believe he's clean. But he is. And the second thing that went through my mind was, you know, I'm somebody. Maybe I got a chance here. You know, it was that really that I've come to know the phrase, that shot of hope. It was the first shot of hope that I ever had. And it took me a little while longer. Like I said, it was 6 months between then and when I finally surrendered and went into rehab. But it took me 6 months of trying it my way. You know, I figured I wasn't as sick as he was, so maybe I didn't have to do all that stuff he did. So maybe I'd do it my way. And I decided at one point, I always had it in my head that alcohol was my only problem. Yeah. Anyway, I always thought that. And at one point during that summer, I decided, you know what, I'm not going to drink for a month. I made a decision. I was not going to drink for a month. If he can do this, I can do this. And I actually did. I actually went for a whole 30 days without a drink. What? He's laughing. He's heard this. What I failed to see and think about when, and it was kind of shown to me once I got into rehab, was, yeah, I may not have had a drink for that 30 days, but I went through about 3 bottles of Valium. I do not have a clue how much cocaine and pot, but I didn't drink. Like I said, I didn't figure that one out till I finally was sitting in rehab. And that was what I needed. I needed to just, like, be away. I just needed to, like, not be around. And the only way I knew how to do that was to not be around. And I, for some reason, instead of calling that guy, I called my mother and asked for some help. And my mother went in search of a rehab, and she found one. And I was like, okay, I'll go. She told me it was 28 days. I'm like, okay, I'll go. I need to do something here. Made the plan arrangements, and then she informed me, well, actually, it's 35 days. Oh, well, already got the flight, might as well go. And then right about the time I was getting on the plane, she informed me that it was all women. Not something I wanted to do, but I hurt. And I said, okay. And when I finally did make it, I went to California thinking that I was going to go out there and get clean and start this wonderful new life. About 3 weeks, somewhere in there, a little bit of the fog started clearing, and it occurred to me that 3,000 miles between my mother and I was a good idea, and I better go home. And when the rehab agreed with me, I knew maybe I was doing something right. And one of the two things, really, I honestly believe that I learned in that rehab was how to get my ass to a meeting. That was probably the most important thing I heard. But the second most important thing for me was they told me it wasn't my fault. And I grew up in a house where my mother's rule of thumb was, whoever's the oldest, it's their fault. That's me. My brother and sister could have a fight over there, and it was my fault, you know. So it took me actually a couple, maybe 2-3 years before I quit saying I was sorry for something somebody else did. I mean, it took a while for that one. But the rehab taught me that, and it taught me that there was something that could be different, and I could do something different. And maybe I might want to take a little look at my history. And when I wrote the history, it was like the first assignment. It was like, okay, here I thought alcohol was my problem. Okay, let's see. The list of things I didn't do is a whole lot shorter. You know, and I came to realize that I had the disease of addiction. And I, for real, was ready and willing to do whatever they told me to do. And I heard a lot of things that, even today, it kind of rubs me the wrong way. If they told me to go hang out in the middle of the street, I'd do it. I don't think so. But you know what? Nobody's ever told me to do something like that. Not once. And what I found when I did come back here, actually, it worked out rather well. The rehab had heard my little story about this guy who took me out to dinner, and they said, go home, call that guy, have him be your temporary sponsor, have him introduce you to some women. Start there. Frankly, I did that. Oh, and by the way, the 45 days turned into two sets of 45 days. But at that point, I was willing. I was really willing, because I hurt, and I was tired of hurting, and I was tired of living the way I was living. I was real tired of living the way I was living. They told me, backtrack just a second, but they told me to remember where I came from, that it was really important, because otherwise I was destined to repeat it. And at the very end, when I called my mother and asked for help, I was living in a house, I think it was someplace in Laurel. Frankly, I don't know. Some lady had allowed me to have a bedroom in the house, and I was sleeping on this orange air mattress. It's one of the thin kinds you find in the swimming pool, with a dirty sleeping bag and a bottle in one hand, a pipe in the other, and a phone. Nobody to call. A suitcase on the floor with my clothes. I remember the suitcase because it was my mother's. I grew up with it. Clothes hanging out on. I mean, there was a hangers and there was closet, but I didn't bother hanging up because I wasn't going to be there long. I hadn't been in one place long for a while. And for a long time, when they told me to play the tape, I'd go through the things about, working in the rock and roll clubs and hanging out and having fun. There's somebody in the room I used to have fun with, and I had a lot of fun for quite a while. And that's why I thought I was supposed to play that part of the tape. Today, when I play that tape, all I got to do is picture that orange air mattress. And I'm willing to do just about anything you guys tell me to do, because I do not want to go back. I can feel the pain, and I don't want to go back. And I, since day one, for real, have done what you guys have told me to do. The one thing that I found in Narcotics Anonymous was nobody ever told me what to do. They shared their experience. They told me what they did. They told me what helped them stay clean. They carried me when I couldn't carry myself and hugged me when I couldn't hug myself and maybe do service when I didn't want to, That was kind of cool, I got to do shit for other people, and they'd say thank you and keep coming back. Still haven't made coffee. That's probably the next thing on the ticket. But they gave me one of the first positions. I got that Friday. I flew back from rehab, and I called that guy, and I met him at my home group, which is still my home group today. It was just a get-down group at Cedar Lane in Bethesda on Friday nights at 8:30. It's been a long time I've been going to that meeting. I really like being there. And I did. I called him up and I asked him to be my temporary sponsor, and he was my temporary sponsor for about a month. And we talked about the steps, and he took me to meetings and introduced me to more people. It just so happens when I walked into the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, having been a bartender for an extended period of time, I knew a whole lot of addicts that had already made it here before me, because I'd gotten a lot of them drunk at one point or another. And I had a ready-made network. I really did. It was very cool. It was very cool. Because I could see in their faces, they liked it. And I kept going back to that because it was really important that I see that. Because I couldn't imagine not using. I just couldn't imagine. And I looked at what they did. I really did. I looked at, I like to call it the common denominators. What are these people doing? And what I found, they were telling me to go to meetings, and I said, all right. And I remember asking this one big guy, Steve, I said, what do you do for fun? He says, I go to meetings. Nah. Okay, well, I'll go to meetings. And what I found when I went to those meetings, what I would see those same people in those meetings, that they were doing exactly what they suggested that I do. And they told me to get a sponsor, and I... kind of like that women thing was really hard for me at first. I didn't like women, and they didn't like me, and I was just fine with that. But they told me that I needed a woman as a sponsor, and that was a little tough. But I kept going to meetings, and I kept listening, and then I showed up at a meeting out in PG County where I was living at the time. I don't know anybody in PG County until then. And I walked into this meeting expecting to know no one, and was feeling very happy about that. And I hear my name being called by a woman from across the room. George, how you doing? And I'm like, oh, shit. And it was a woman. I was a stripper at one point, too, and she was a stripper with me. She was like one of the few women I really liked. And I said, what's the sponsorship shit? And she said, don't worry about it. I'm it. It worked out really well. It's like, all right, this can work. And what she did, she didn't help me a whole lot with steps at first, but what she did was she took me to a lot of meetings. I didn't have a car. This the government had my driver's license for a while. And she would take me to meet, come pick me up, take me to meetings, and introduce me to a whole lot of women. And it was hard. And there's this one great big guy that I really liked that was there, and but he was scary, because I'm scared of anybody. But there's a big guy, and he'd come over. George would come over, and he goes, "Got any phone numbers?" And I go, "No." Next time I saw him, same thing. Finally, I went and got a phone book, filled it full of numbers, and went, "Leave me alone!" And he did, and he just laughed, walked away. Come to find out, he's like soft as big as a bear, gentle guy that there is. But, you know, oh well. But the other thing that happened was at this little candlelight meeting on Monday night, I found. That was pretty cool. Y'all couldn't see my face. You couldn't see how scared I was. You couldn't see the fear. But they could see I needed a service commitment, so they decided to make me chair of that meeting. And I remember well because I wrote out the whole thing. I mean, now a lot of meetings, they write the whole thing out, but back then they didn't. And I wrote the whole thing out, including, "I'm an act, my name's George." Because I was certain I was going to forget to say that, and I would be mortified if that was going to happen, you know. But it's like, I can do this. And they gave me a long explanation about how to get NA speakers and how to go to meetings and listen for the NA message. And I got to learn, and they were very gentle about it, you know, and I got to learn what I was listening for. And in the process of that, I was listening to other women and coming to realize that I needed someone a little more into some steps and a little more into service than the sponsor that I first had. She helped me a lot, I have to say. She really helped me a lot because she introduced me to a whole lot of women. And she was not a working mom. She stayed at home mom, and I could go out and hang out with her and paint her house, do her laundry, and help her with things. And I stayed clean. The most important thing, I did stay clean. And I finally realized, though, that I really needed somebody that was going to do a little more step work. But also, she was kind of a screamer, and they told me I should maybe get somebody that had what I wanted, and I didn't really want to do that. And I remember somebody I'd gotten to be friends with came up to me one time and said, "Does she really have what you want?" And I had to take a look at it. And I found another sponsor and who did know something about steps, and I worked with her for a while, but she was a school teacher, and this is my shit, but I always thought I was being graded. And it's totally not her. It was totally me. But I remember she assigned a book for me to read. And I was cool. I was ready. I was ready to read this book. And I started to read it. And she called me back like 2 days later. And she said, "Oh, I forgot to tell you. While you're reading the book, if you find a word you don't know, look it up and write the definition in the book." And I closed it. And that was it. I've read it since. And it was a great book. But I just... that wasn't working for me at the time. And but I kept coming to meetings, and I there's a whole crew of us that went to that little candlelight meeting. That was over 18 years ago. There's a whole crew of us that went to that candlelight meeting every Monday night. It was a beginner step meeting. And I saw these same people. I could name the specific meetings that we went to just about every night. And it wasn't until I had about 5 years that I didn't go to a meeting every night. That's what I did. That's what we did. That's what I was told was going to keep me clean. That's what I was told was going to make my life change. So that's what we did. And those same people, a lot of them are at this convention, still clean today. And it gives me goosebumps. It's like walking in and seeing Mark. It's like, all right, I know this guy. This is cool. But it's like, you guys kept leading me down and showed me things that I didn't think I could ever do. I was one of those people that was just terrified of the world, thought I was absolutely useless. Y'all were talking about character defects, and I'm looking at you going, what the hell are you talking about? That's all I am, is one big one. Clueless. And but you kept telling me. You kept telling me about your experiences, and you kept saying, keep coming back. And you said, you know what? Serve people that get in service don't tend to go too far. I got in service. I've never been out of service. I was like, okay, I can do this. One of the things that was intimidating to me at one time was a friend of mine, actually I had about 6 months clean, and this guy that I'd gotten to be friends with, this is a little sawed-off guy that's helped a whole lot of people get into service, decided that he was going to be the literature chair for the area, and he asked me as a friend to come help, and I thought as a friend that's all I was doing. And the next thing I know, he was handing me the checkbook. And I was having to come home from area service with like $1,000-some-odd in cash and count it and roll coins and put it in somebody else's account the next day. I did it. I did it. And they kept telling me to keep coming back. And then at that time, the area service, the literature was outside of that main big room. That big room was scary. And those people at area service, you're intimidating. I mean, I'm intimidated by this, you know. Area was like, but being outside in that little room behind that desk, giving you guys literature, I could do that. And I did that. But by the end of that year, I was like, I want to know what's going on in there. And I made the mistake of walking in there on nomination day. And somebody nominated me as vice chair of the area. And I'm going, I don't know why. I said yes. I didn't know what I was getting into. And then I turned to my sponsor and I'm like, and she said, you already said yes. And then we talked about it, and I was telling her how terrified I was. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what's going on. She says, that's probably good for this particular position. You're not supposed to have an opinion. Okay. And she said, and I'm here. I'm here up to, you know, I said, what happens if I fall on my face? She says, I'm here. Help pick up the pieces. Whatever. And I got through that, and I did that. And one of my really good friends, I was just talking about this the other day, because my real break-in was when that chair that year couldn't make it and I had to substitute and didn't know what I was doing. And my buddy, my pal that I've known, used with and have known for a very long time, been clean for a while, emotion was on the floor and he came up and whispered in my ear, call it out of order. I said, out of order? He said, appeal the chair! I'm like, what? Anyway. I got to learn a little bit about Robert's Rules. So I went home and read the book that night, you know. But, you know, having been doing these things, you know, and it's gone from there, and really being in the middle of this, I have fallen in love with the fellowship and doing things for the fellowship, being part of this fellowship. I have a friend a couple of years ago who created this little button that he brought to this convention. It's called Be the We. And that three little words is how I feel about this fellowship and everything that it has done for me. Been clean for a while now, and I still, like I said, I have not been out of service. I go up to Clarksburg with the county jail every Wednesday, and I go in there, and it's like, that could be me. And it's not. And I go in there and I hear their stories and I hear what's going on and I'm like, you know, been there, done that, don't ever want to go back. Don't ever want to go back. So I do those things that you guys say. I still have, I got a new sponsor recently and I'm working on some more steps and a little deeper. It's like every time I get a sponsor, they're a little more deeper. And that's a good thing, you know, getting to know more about me. Because I'm still terrified of me a lot of the time. But today I can actually say that more than half the time I am not uncomfortable in my own skin. And I couldn't say that a while back. Like I said, I love Narcotics Anonymous and I will continue to do what is suggested. You know, it's just, lack of a better thing to say, it is what it is and I love it. I just love it. I have never, ever been part of anything in my life that I felt like I belonged to till I came here. And it's, I gotta talk about one other thing. I'm gonna give it up to Jonathan because I wanna hear him, but I need to talk about it just a little bit. My sister just got diagnosed with cancer and it's really hard. It's really hard. But one of the really cool things that's going on for me at the moment, my mother and I were talking it was my dad and I, and he was talking about my sister needing a network. And I guess he must have talked to my mother about it because she got on the phone and she's worried about me. And she says, you know, I hope you have a network. And I'm like, you have no clue. You have no clue what I got. I mean, I got somebody from Texas, you know, that they're everywhere. And I love it. And it's not, I took somebody into the rehab recently to lead a meeting and they equated their network to this stupid little Verizon commercial with all those people standing behind them. That's a big picture, you know? But that's how I feel. That is how I feel most of the time. You know, it's like just now, it's like, this stuff is scary to me. But there's certain sources of strength that I got. And it's like right before this, I'm like, Mike, I need a Mike hug. You know, it's like my strength. My strength is here. And why would I want to go someplace else? Why would I want to go? And but half of my adrenaline stuff is not just doing this tonight. The convention is near and dear to my heart, and I've signed up for next year. Be like the third year that I've gotten involved with this thing. And man, I wish I could hand this to everybody else. I wish that it was a package that you could pack up and hand to somebody. I got a couple of sponsees who relapsed after a number of years, and they're fighting to get back. And I see that, and I go, think of that fucking Orange Air mattress. What do I need to do? You guys tell me, because I'm going to do it, you know. So if I have anything to share with you all, just think about it for a minute and think about where you've been and don't forget it. And remember where you can go, because there is amazing places that you can go. Standing here is something that I would never have ever thought I could do, ever. A couple years back, standing on that stage downstairs, that was a trip in itself. You know, I had to do that, and I was talking to somebody the other night. It was like, I remember that night because I didn't think I could do it. And there was an ex-stripper standing next to me. I said, you know how much easier it would be to get up on that stage and take your clothes off rather than stand here and talk to you and share me? That's scary. But that's what keeps me alive. That's what keeps me hooked in. It's what keeps me going. And I'm just really grateful for Narcotics Anonymous and everything it's given me. Thanks for letting me share.
Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Jonathan. Good evening.
Hey, Jonathan.
Good evening, group. I'm Jonathan. I'm Addie.
Hey, Jonathan.
And I want to thank George for leading the way, setting the tone for us. I got a question. How many newcomers in here tonight? Okay, people that have less than a year? Okay, good. I just wanted to get a feel, you know, because this topic, relapse, is not requirement, right? So, and I don't know how else to say it or talk about it, but through my own personal experience. See, when I came around this fellowship, I was first introduced to Narcotics Anonymous in 1983, right? I was working for Bell Atlantic at the time. I was a 411 information operator. And I was smoking cocaine. I was smoking boat, I was smoking weed, I was smoking whatever I could light. And I was drinking and doing everything. And of course, in 1983, you couldn't tell people you were smoking coke or doing any kind of illegal drugs on the job. So the job kind of knew I had a problem. Because, see, the thing was, when you're an operator, you plug into this board. And you're online with calls coming in left and right. And you're talking to people. And they give you a little script and tell you how to talk to them, what to say, and all that. So every now and then, whoever your group manager was, they would go in the back, plug in, and listen to your calls, monitor you. Okay? So this particular day, I was in my element. And I needed a hit. So in order to get out the board, you had to put a sign up. It's a magnetic sign on your position that says necessary. When you have to take a necessary, you go to the bathroom or whatever. So I put my sign up. Manager comes over, plugs in, then I can unplug. And I would run down the steps, cross the street, get a drink, run back in the building, hit the bathroom, take a hit, and come back in there. Now, before I did all that, my spiel was, Bell Atlantic, this is Jonathan, may I help you? Right? So that's how I talk, that's how I sound. But after I took that hit, it was, Bell Atlantic, this is Jonathan, may I help you? So the manager's like, hey, let me unplug him. Something's wrong. Are you okay? You know, what's going on? So that's how they found out I had a problem. They just didn't know what it was. But they told me they had help. They said, we can get you some help. So I said, well, all right. So what happened is I wound up going to this place called, I don't know if I can say the name, but I'm going to say the name. It was Colemak Clinic in Silver Spring, Maryland. It was an outpatient place. So every day I would get off work 4:45. I was supposed to get off at 5, but they let me go 15 minutes early so I could walk from the job around the corner to this outpatient clinic. And this is what I would do. I'd walk around there. I think it was for a week. I think that's all I could last. As soon as payday came, you know, it was over. But I was going to the clinic, and they was talking about substance abuse. They was talking about treatment. They was talking about, you know, drugs in the workplace and all that kind of stuff. So I sat in there, and I listened, and they were talking about people who were getting better, and there was other members in there. We all talked about it and everything, and, you know, it was looking promising, and I was like, okay. So at the time, I was married, and I had a newborn, my son. He was in the crib, and my wife, she would come up to the job 4:45 and be standing outside with him in the crib to walk me around the corner to this outpatient place. So it was cool. You know, everything was working. We was happy. We was in love again and all that until payday. So when payday came, you know, I was at work, man, and that thing just hit me. I was just thinking, and I got to making calls and setting up stuff, and it was just a matter of getting off and getting to it. But I had to get past her. So when I came outside, she was out there. So we walked around the corner, and I stepped up in the doorway like I was going in. And she saw me step up in the doorway, so she kept going. But I laid up against the door so she couldn't see my body like I went in, right? And then I leaned back. I saw that she was walking around the corner, so I backed out and went and did my thing. But when I went back to the clinic the next day and I told Dr. Kalanda what happened, he said, well, okay, when you get clean, come back. I'm like, what? He put me out. I mean, how am I going to get clean then? And he was like, well, this is not one of them programs where you can use. You can come here using the first time. And we recognize it. We take your blood and your urine, and we know you got that stuff in you. After that, you can't do it no more to stay in here. And I was like, what the hell kind of program is this? Now, some of y'all might call that a relapse. That's not a relapse. I was just using. Okay? So what happened after that? Okay, I did a little bit more. Got a little worse. This time I went to Washington and Venice Hospital, emergency. It was Sunday, and I can remember because the Redskins was playing. That's my team. And I had smoked so much coke the night before, and I was using this Ron Rican rum to burn it, that alcohol was in my body to the point that I sat down on the bed to get comfortable for the game, and all of a sudden everything went black. My eyes were wide open, but I couldn't see. And I panicked. Then my heart started skipping, and I fell on the floor. And I thought I was going to die. And I called my wife. I said, honey, I want to die. My heart, she said, well, what do you want me to do? I said, call 911. She called 911. And when I fell to the floor, I fell like on my knees. So I was kind of like on my knees with my head on the floor, and that was the only position that was comfortable. If I moved any other kind of way, my heart started jumping around. But as long as I was like that, I was calm. So I stayed like that. So when the paramedics got there, they was like, okay, turn over. I said, oh, no, you can't turn me over. You know, I can't move. They was like, well, we got to put you on a stretcher. I said, you got to put me on here like this. So I'm going to tell you, man, it was taking me outside on a Sunday afternoon with people walking around outside. I'm on a gurney with my ass in the air. You know what I'm saying? emergency, man. Took me to Washington Venice Hospital. He said, man, we got a place upstairs for people like you. We know what your problem is. You know, we can help you. I was like, I ain't got no problem. You know, I felt better now. I got to leave against medical advice, AMA. That's not a relapse. That's using. That's a break in between using. And I'm saying that because in after that, it got so bad that this time, when I went to treatment, I didn't care about the job. I didn't care about the wife. I didn't care about what y'all thought. I didn't care about nothing. I wanted some help this time. I wanted to get whatever it was I could get. And I already been introduced twice. Just didn't hold. So this time, 1987, see, I got 8,013 days today, right? So this time, when I went in treatment on May the 10th, 1987, and I stayed for 30 days at Psychiatric Institute of Washington, they gave me all the information on addiction. You know, they brought meetings in, they took us out. We had all kind of help, counseling, psychiatry. We had the psych team, the drug team. We had all that in there together. So after them 31 days, I got a sponsor. I left out. I went straight to a meeting like they suggested. And I've been going ever since, almost 22 years now. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or a drug since at that point. But I got to say this because, you know, some of y'all are new. And some of us have been through this process. And for some reason, we found it necessary to pick up again. Therefore, we have a chapter in our basic text called Relapse Recovery. So what it's saying is that some people may struggle on this path. That's okay. Some people may actually relapse. But it's not a requirement. You don't really have to, you know. But some people have. We have struggled. Some people have stumbled along the way. What I went through, I wouldn't consider that a relapse. And that's why I gave you those scenarios. But I've had some sponsees, and, of course, I've been to a lot of meetings in almost 22 years up in D.C. area, Montgomery County area, PG area, and I've seen a lot of people come and go. You know, now I have developed some relationships with a lot of folks, some folks who had time, folks who were here when I got here, who had more time than me, who talked about the steps, who had working knowledge of the steps, who was living what I thought was the program. And for some reason, at some point in their life, something they did or something they didn't do caused them to get in a position where they used again. That's a relapse. You know, this is my opinion, y'all, but that's relapse. Because you had a sponsor, you prayed, you attended meetings, you got service positions, you worked steps, you did whatever it was they said you needed to do to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And at some point, something happened in your life, something went on. And usually, when I talk to those people, because I have, because there was always a question, what happened? Or when I'm sitting in a meeting and one of them is sharing and they're talking about it, that's what I want to hear. What happened? And the first thing they say is they stopped going to meetings. That's the first thing they say out of their mouth. They stopped going to meetings. So outside, the things outside seem more appealing than what goes on in here. They started socializing with quote-unquote normal earth people. You know, people who leave work and go to the bar, people who have me in treatment, was my counselor that went to the bar every night after they counseled my ass on my addiction. But they didn't have what I had. They had the job to treat addicts. They didn't have to admit that they was or not. And as a matter of fact, that's through your own admission. They left work and went and did whatever they did. Their job was to make sure I got 30 days, 31 days of counseling about drug addiction. That's it. But basically what I'm saying is I had a friend who had 24 years in this program. He had 24 years, and he had a problem with his back to the point that they did surgery a couple of times. And when they did that surgery, he was in a lot of pain for a long time. So he had prescriptions for Oxycontin, Tylenol 3s, and things of that sort. And it says on the bottle, or it says from the doctor's instructions, take these as prescribed. And from what I know, from the experience that I've had through my sponsor and all of the people that I associate with Narcotics Anonymous, they all say the same thing. Follow your doctor's orders. Follow the prescription. Take it as prescribed. Because some of us, if you stay clean long enough and you did the things that I did when I was using to my body, you're going to come up with some shit later on. You're going to come up with some stuff you're going to have to see the doctor for. You're going to have some problems. You might have to get a tooth out because, you know, heroin will eat up the enamel in your teeth. You know, you have to see a dentist at some point. And most likely, he's going to pull something, root canal something. He's going to do something, and you're going to have some pain. And he's going to give you a prescription. And you're going to say, well, I'm in recovery. I can't take that. Well, your ass is going to be in a lot of pain. So the deal is you can take it, but you need to take it as it's prescribed. You cannot take it with manufactured pain. You can't take it, the prescription, if it ain't yours, if it's somebody else's. You know, well, hey, man, I got a toothache. Can I get one of your Oxycontins? You know, or can I go, you know, instead of going to the dentist myself or the doctor myself, getting checked out and getting told and getting the prescription for myself, I want to take yours. To me, I think something's wrong with that. And this is just my opinion. I'm not the authority on Narcotics Anonymous. I'm not the authority on relapse. I'm not the authority on anything except what I've been through. So I'm just saying, think about it. If it says prescribe every 4 hours, then why are you taking one every 2 hours? Or why are you taking two every 2 hours? Why are you just dumping a whole damn bottle in your mouth? You know, you're looking for something. See, me, I'm the kind of guy, I'm not going to fool around with some, you know, bullshitting with a pill here and a pill there. I'm going to go, I'm going. You know, I'm not calling nobody, I'm calling my sponsor, I'm not informing nobody because I don't want you to stop me. And you really can't. Once I made my mind up, that's what the hell I'm going to do. It ain't nothing you can do. Ain't nothing you can say to me. That's what I'm going to do. And if I've already been here, and if I've already done this, and I've made that decision, that's a relapse. That's saying, okay, I don't want to recover no more. I don't want to do this thing called recovery no more. I'm tired of going to meetings. I'm tired of sponsorship. I don't want to do no homework. I don't want to pick up no books. I don't want to write nothing. I don't want to do no steps. I don't want to do that. That's what I'm saying. I want to relapse. I want to get how I want to use. I don't want to recover anymore. Well, I'm afraid of that, personally, because Saturday, I just turned 59. It was my birthday, right? 59. And next month, May the 16th, I'll be celebrating 22 years in Narcotics Anonymous. So the math, to me, says that if I'm 59 now, if I decide to use again, which would be a relapse, no doubt in my mind, it's nowhere in the hell I'm going to get another 22 years. Just don't add up. So with, you know, I ain't got to be a rocket scientist to figure it out. I might as well stay here. Plus, I'm living better than I ever have. And I go to meetings. I attend meetings because I want to hear from y'all, newcomers as well as old timers. I want to hear from y'all how y'all stay clean today. What you do today? Why are you here today? Why do you keep coming back? I need that. Because if I don't get that, I might decide to ride off in the sunset. You know, I mean, things are pretty good. I got a good job. You know, I got a nice place. I got a pretty good relationship. Things are really looking up. Do I still need y'all? Do I still need to come to meetings? Do I still need to hear, you know, people vomiting on the meeting, newcomers or old-timers alike, or somebody, you know, with strong personalities in the room and in the group consciousness, you know, all kinds of stuff to be happening in the group consciousness? Do I need to put up with that when I could be home watching TV or, you know, at the local club, you know, sipping on seltzer water or something. You know, I ain't got to really drink yet. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I can live like normal folks. I knew how that was once. The deal is I've bought into this thing. I truly believe that I have a disease of addiction that I have, I cannot control it. I suffer from compulsive obsessive behavior disorder, and it don't necessarily have to come out in the form of drugs. It comes out in anything I find myself doing that I like. If I do it once and I like it, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to do it again. And then I'm going to do it again, and I'm going to do it again, until it causes me some pain, until the pain of you know, stopping is less than to continue to do it. So if I'm getting freedom from it, then I'm going to stop. But if I ain't getting no freedom, if I'm not looking for any freedom, if I'm looking for whatever it is I'm aiming for, then I'm going to keep doing it because I obsess. I have compulsions every now and then to hit me. The only thing that's happened in 22 years that I'm sure of is that my opportunities to get high and the desire has not met up. Because I've been in situations where I wanted to get high. I just didn't have opportunity. And I've been in situations where I had the opportunity, but I didn't want to. You understand? So I know that there's a higher power. I know that there is something else working besides me that's not allowed those two things to line up. And I think step work, sponsorship, and meeting attendance is some of that, some of those tools that keep that from lining up. Because my thinking, my spirit, my attitude, the lifestyle that I'm living is causing me to do things that's against active using. You know, so I don't line up with the mentality of someone who's out there trying to get it every day. My thinking is not like this. And it took some time. It took me paying attention to my sponsor. It took me listening in meetings. It took me going to meetings. It took me praying. It took me saying, first and foremost, that I couldn't pick up. Staying clean must come first. And when I stay clean, other things seem to happen to help me along the way. But don't get me wrong, I'm not exempt. I'm one, the guy had 24 years. I ain't got 24 yet. And he did this. People that had more time than that. People got more time than me. That has done it. Found some way to do it. And that thing that I keep hearing, the common thing is that they first stop going to meetings. And see, that's why I keep coming. I'm afraid not to keep coming. Because I already seen some of the good side of life, some of the things that has happened as a result of staying clean and attending meetings. That's why I come to this convention. If it wasn't here, I don't care where it was, I would still go. I would find a way to do it. This is what I do. It's not my life, but it's a lifeline. You know, I do live outside these rooms. I play softball. I was playing on 2 teams until I started going to school. I was playing on a 50 and over team, and then I was playing on a co-ed team. And it was both fellowship related. And I was having fun. You know, I hand dance. I like dancing. You know, I'm active. I'm an active 59-year-old. You know what I'm saying? I be getting up. Yeah, the 50 is the new 30. You know that, man? That's right, you know, and being clean for 20 years, I've had a second chance, you know, because I've been through some stuff now. Don't get me wrong, I've been through some stuff in recovery, you know, got divorced, I done lost jobs, lost homes, and then I had a health issue. I had a big health issue with hepatitis C. You know, that knocked me down. You know, I was starting a business and everything. I had left Verizon, took the bio, took the money. You know, got my own truck and everything, was setting stuff up, and that hepatitis C knocked me, you know, to the ground. And I had to go take the treatment for 49 weeks. I had to inject myself in the skin with what was that? What was the name of that medicine? I forgot. Pega interferon. That's what it was. Stuck it under my skin. Then I had to take the Ribavine pills, you know, 1,200 milligrams a day, 600 in the morning, 600 in the evening. And then I was loony as a tune, man. I was in a relationship. She said, hold it. I think I got to go. You know? And I don't even know why she stayed as long as she did, because I ain't going to never say nothing bad about her. She was a sweetheart. Because if it was me, I'd haul ass in the opposite direction. You know, somebody was trying to get me to hook up with them. With all that going on, I'd have ran. But she was a deer for just sticking it out as long as she did. Because, my emotions, that medicine caused all my emotions to increase like 10 times. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know about nobody else. Cause people have had different experiences on it. It'll probably be different for every individual. But for me, that's what I went through. I even had to check in to 3D East in the VA hospital, which is the psych unit, for 7 days for suicide observation as a result of the treatment. You understand? But on the flip side of it, the outcome was that I'm virus free as a result of the treatment. So I don't, you know, and I keep going once a year and get blood work, and they check it and they keep monitoring me, my liver and everything, to make sure I don't have any cirrhosis effects. So, and I believe that had I not gotten clean when I did, that if I had not stopped using when I did and went through the process of staying clean and sticking and staying, because see, I want to do something. I want to applaud the people who stayed, who stuck it out, who stayed when their wife left them, or when they found out their significant other was cheating on them, when they lost their job, when they lost their home, when they had bad health, and they still didn't find it necessary to go use. I want to applaud y'all. Because y'all stayed. Y'all went through the shit and stayed. You didn't make an excuse. The pain was too great. Fuck that. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Ain't no excuse, man. That's what they told me, that when I got here, they took all my excuses away. You don't have an excuse to get high. If you do it, you do it because you want to. You got all this information, loving God, caring, you know, understanding, sponsor, information, literature, personal addicts, experience one to another, you know, an addict, therapeutic value, one addict helping another's without parallel. You got all that. And if you need something outside, shit, you can go outside. Get some psychiatric help. You can get some help from your minister. You can get some help from your doctor. You can get all that. But bring your ass back in here to me. And follow the process like it's been laid. And they say when you do that, rarely. Never. Almost never. I mean, it's impossible. You cannot work the program of Narcotics Anonymous and get high too. You can't. So what I'm saying is, a lot of people have come back after they used and shit and did whatever the hell they did, and they in meetings shame like a motherfucker. Talking about, I've been around for 18 years, but motherfucker, you ain't got but 30 days clean. What are you talking about? You've been around for 18 years. You ain't been in for 18 years. You don't even qualify as a relapse. You're just a chronic fucking user for 18 years. And then you're in here shaming about this shit. You're making other motherfuckers sick along with you. Shut the fuck up. Get a sponsor. Work some steps. Try staying clean, motherfucker, and then share about that. This is what I'm talking about. This is the shit that bothers me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to beat up on nobody or nothing. I'm just saying, you know, it gets to me, you know, because I'm sitting there, I'm trying to have atmosphere recovery, you know, and hear your story. Now, if you got 2 days clean, okay. Tell me about that. Tell me about the 2 days. Tell me what you just went through, because I know your ass on fire. But don't start telling me how you work the steps and you on the fourth step and all that shit. You know, wait a minute. You drunk, now you want me to get drunk. Fuck that. Somebody needs to say, hey, hold it. Shut up. Well, when we want to know how to get high, we'll call on your ass. In the meantime, you sit there and listen, and you listen to recovery. You hear how to recover. You follow some suggestions. You get a sponsor. You pray. First and foremost, don't pick up shit. Then when you do that, then I want to hear how you did it. So I'd be glad to listen. Shit, you can call me up. Hell, I'll sponsor you. You know? But don't be in the meeting with your hand up every time, every damn meeting you in, trying to talk about, well, my 18 years of experience around recovery. What the fuck is that? You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. When I came, they told me to shut the fuck up. And I got offended. Because I had some shit to say. Matter of fact, we almost got to fighting up in there. You know, I was so mad, you know. I wanted to throw a chair at her. Yeah, it was a female, yeah. And she's still clean, too. And I ain't speak to her ass for 6 months. I had a resentment and didn't even know what it was. But I kept coming until I found out. And then I could hug her. And to this day, you know, I appreciate that. Because if it wasn't for her, if she didn't hit me in my damn gut in treatment, tell me to shut the hell up, what the hell am I going to tell him about both of us in the damn psych unit? What the... And the dude that brought up there, I ain't have shit to say to him either. But today we all, you know, we still clean. We keep coming back. And the process does work, y'all. It really does. Just like it is. It's carefully laid. You know, it's God-given. It's a blessing. You know, it's miraculous. Everybody sitting in here tonight is a miracle. It's a miracle. I'm a miracle. I know this because I know what I was doing. If I don't know what you was doing, I know exactly what I was doing. 22 years ago, I know what I did when I put all them drugs in my body and I wanted to die because I didn't see no way out. And I called my wife up on the phone, sniffling. I had snot coming down my face. I told her, I said, honey, you ain't going to have to worry about this no more. Before I could get it out, she said, well, what you going to do, kill yourself? Like, hurry up, you know. You know, get this shit over with. So I can collect the insurance. And me and my boyfriend can get on with life. Because you holding up the process. And I was like, damn. Come in over here. Oh, man, that's how it was. So I remember. I know I don't want to go back there. And everybody I talk to that relapsed, truthfully relapsed, that's where they went, right back to where they left. They didn't miss a beat. Shit got bad immediately. Didn't wait, you know, it didn't take a long period of time. They just got fucked up again. Do I want to do that? Hell no. I really don't. But sometimes the disease is powerful enough to say, go ahead. Try. Maybe you can make some money off it this time. You can sell it. Crazy, man. But if I don't come in here, if I don't have a sponsor, if I'm not following the process, if I'm not sharing openly and honestly with somebody, then that's the kind of shit that would sound good. That's the kind of stuff I would entertain. I would think about it, don't say nothing. You know, truth, character defects die in the light of exposure. But if I hold them inside, if I don't say nothing, they tend to have a tendency to grow. They get a little momentum. They get a little stronger than me. Before you know it, they popping out everywhere. People would say, what the hell is wrong with him? I don't even know that it's going on. It's because I ain't shared shit with nobody. So I'm walking around holding it. You know? We don't hold shit in here. We let it go. We turn it over. Then we let it go. So you have to develop that network, that sponsorship line. I hope your sponsor got a sponsor because he's an addict too. And so is his sponsor. And I hope he got one too. Because we need to have sponsors who got sponsors who got sponsors who got a working knowledge of Narcotics Anonymous in case any one of us should drop. You know the term trusted servant? Y'all know what that means, right? I trust you to serve me when I'm down, and vice versa. When you down, you trust me to serve you. And thank God, hopefully, we all don't be down at the same time. That when half of the room is down, the other half is up. And it just flips backwards and forth, and we just keep helping each other. I ain't even gotta know you. I ain't even gotta like you. Shit, you ain't gotta like me. A lot of y'all don't like me. I know, that's all right. But we gotta keep coming back. We gotta keep helping each other because the disease does not care. It does not respect anything about you. It doesn't care what your job is, what your spiritual function is. It doesn't care what your health is. It don't care what your race is, what your preference is. It doesn't. It does not care. And it doesn't respect any of it. It will take you out. It will check in with you to see if you want to check out. And the only thing that I've found that has worked for me, the insurance that I put on myself, is I keep coming. I keep showing up. And the evidence is in that those who don't, who ride off into the sunset and start doing other stuff, that's what happened. They get out there with them earth people. They start thinking like the earth people. They start acting like the earth people. And next thing you know, they got earth in their mouth or whatever. You know, they're ingesting all kinds of shit and they wonder what the hell happened. And just my opinion, and I don't know, I'm not your authority, but that's not a relapse. That's a user. Somebody using. Because if you work in this program, you cannot practice step one and pick up. Tell me how you can do that. Step one says you're powerless over your addiction. You're powerless over mood-altering substance. You are powerless. And they tell you, do not pick it up under no circumstance. So if I pick up, what I'm saying is I got power. And when I use, it's all bets are off. I am no longer practicing the powerlessness concept the minute I take that shit into my hand. Pick it up. So when you pick up, you ain't working the program. Because if you work in the program, you are not picking up. Simple as that. Don't take a rocket scientist. You ain't got to have all these degrees or none of that to figure that out. You don't pick up, you can't get out. Goes over some of our heads. But I don't really think so. That's just my opinion. I think we make a conscious decision. We say, fuck it. We're going to do it. And that's what I've heard from most of the people who've done that. They came back pretty much. When we really get down and move all the smoke out the way and the dust settles and everything gets, we get right down, finally when they start getting honest and tell the truth, they say, man, I just did it. Okay, why you ain't go through all that other shit? Just say that. That's the only time you're going to begin to get help again. But if you keep putting up a facade and faking and acting like everything is okay, smiling when you don't want to, laughing at shit you don't think is funny, going through the process and you're going to show up, you're going to sit in here and you're going to pick holes in everything somebody say, you just indifferent and intolerant towards spiritual principles, I don't know how you think you're going to get it. But if that's happening, you need to figure out why or get some help by sharing it, and maybe somebody can tell you why and give you a suggestion on what to do, because if you don't stop it, you're heading out the door. You got a foot on a banana peel and one in the graveyard, and my time is up. I appreciate y'all for tolerating me and listening and I'm going to go on and party and have some fun for the rest of this weekend. You know, it's warm. This is about the second time it's been warm since I've been coming down here. Do they have the amusement park open? That little loop roller coaster thing? Now, anyway, thanks for letting me see you.
Thanks for saying. We're going to close with the serenity prayer because we are out of time. It says if there's any time left, have somebody share, but the next meeting starts at 11:45. So, circle up.
Got a nice way to close.